some ancient anti-domestication music there from the Kinks in the Paper Cities. Well, it's August 21st for Anarchy Radio. Carl's back.
Woo!
Ha ha, it's great to see you. How was that bike trip?
Bike trip was great. Took a nice route out to the coast up north on the new Willamette Valley bike route. And then over to the coast on the Nestucca River Road, which is just a beautiful, beautiful road.
Not too much traffic up there, though.
No, not at all.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Any advice for people doing bike stuff up there?
Make sure that you get your bike tuned up really well beforehand, because I was probably saved a couple of times by stuff that I did in preparation. With all new cables, greased everything up, got a new wheel, and it was great. I didn't even get a puncture at all.
Gee, that was really prepared.
Yep. It was very successful on that count.
Weird. Glad you learned about something.
Well, thank you.
Let's see. Well, I wanted to mention that the second annual Anarchist Forum is going to take place in Chile. I think it is still going to take place in early September, but not in Santiago in Valparaiso, which I guess is further south.
If I was in Indiana.
Well, it isn't. Actually, the first part would be in Indiana, and then
Of course.
That's the way to do it. But it doesn't look real promising for Mario being able to attend. I think the funding is still 100% there, and we're only got like 10 days. But there's a chance, and this is probably a bigger long shot, but this possible Syria, Israel, Egypt deal, there's some interest in that, and again, it probably does hinge on whether there's any money available from any group or university to get over there. It's just the travel expense, you know, but I'm real keen on that. I hope it can happen, and I don't go into what details are, because it's far from further than south, that's for sure. Well, I was on the road this weekend, today and yesterday, went down to Northern California, I had a bike there, but it was just really driving yesterday, and today, and had a very glorious, wonderful, fun, intense visit with my old friend Joe Romero, who's down there near Crescent City at the infamous Pelican Bay State Prison. He's been locked down for 31, going on 32 years, and it is such a nice scene. It's just, he's got grandchildren now, and he's just so, the way he just lit up so intently, just so incandescently, talking about his granddaughters was just something to check out, and all kinds of stories, and he's got a pretty good job. He's got a pretty soft job there, actually, now in such a, and that place is known for one thing, the numbers of self-mutilations and attempted suicides, it's just so horrendous, but he's doing okay, and one thing related to that in the news, we asked him about this. He had heard about this through a friend whose mother is a cook at Corcoran State Prison, which is one of the other, what's the other worst place in the California system. This happened Thursday. Calipatria State Prison, down near San Diego. Apparently a prisoner was being searched and resisted and started fighting, and there was an hour-long riot which left two inmates killed. One was shot and one was clubbed over the head and killed, and 20 guards were hurt, and on the same day, as a matter of fact, in Canada, in New Brunswick, there were fires set in the prison yard, and was, you know, was quite a set to there. The funny thing about this Calipatria uprising, the Lady Morales for her, both prisoners and guards actually at Pelican Bay didn't believe it actually happened, because what happens apparently very routinely is they shut down the entire system. And I don't know how many prisons there are, 30 or something like that, in the whole California Department of Corrections. It shows, for one thing, how edgy they are. I mean, that this could just spread somehow. I guess that's the logic for it. But it didn't happen. Pelican Bay has been in lockdown for a while. Some of it is still in lockdown, so that's maybe part of it. It was already, it probably still is on lockdown, which is a partial explanation, I guess. But, this thing, and this is not, this can't be a big surprise. I mean, we had a lot of young Latino or Black, predominantly, gang members, we're doing 25 to life, which means life. Nobody gets paroled these days for years now. Really, no one gets paroled, even cops. So these people know they ain't coming out. They got very little to lose. And this kind of thing, these explosions happen, and probably more things will happen. But we had a marvelous visitor, Joe, and he's strong, he's healthy, and he's got a big reason to believe in his connection with more of his family as well, by the way. And the prospects, even though it's been 31 years, and there is a factory now, a financial factory, and the state does not want to pay for the health expenses of aging prisoners. Joe's 59, and he's not requiring a lot of medical attention, but they're going to probably, to some degree, anyway, try to get rid of older prisoners so they don't have to take care of them, such as that health care in prison is. But that's maybe a slight way of hope there. Some of the news, let's see, that was sort of the end of the week. End of the week in Ecuador, the third rail from Ecuador to the U.S. has been cut, and oil production has been paralyzed in the 2 million oil-producing provinces, Amazonian provinces. Ecuadorian President Palacio responded by declaring martial law in those provinces, authorizing security forces to retake the oil fields and censoring all the news in the region. Ecuador is the second biggest U.S. oil supplier in South America, over half a million barrels a day. Let's see, also in the middle of the week, riot police in Sao Paulo, Brazil, cleared hundreds out of a downtown building that had been spotted by dozens of poor families, and they resisted the pins with projectiles. Police responded with tear gas and rubber bullets and broke down the reinforced steel door. In South Africa, widespread unemployment, lack of basic services, and the rumor that the government was going to forego local elections led to 3 days of rioting at the beginning of this week, and culminated with folks burning down three rooms owned by ANC politicians, African National Congress politicians, which kind of reminds me, by the way, all of the usual illusory hopes for leftist formations. This is just another one. And these ANC, I think people kind of move on. They don't really want to follow up and find out what the reality is. It's really stolen this stuff down there by the ANC. And it reminds me of the EZLM, yet another communique, kind of a long deal. I think it was last week, they discussed that they would be part of elections, and now they're now it's they've just become very openly leftist. And the point is, the kind of the punchline idea is, easily land speak here, that they don't organize workers or students. It's the indigenous. That's who they organize. That's their beat. And it's just a straight up leftist racket officially. I don't know what else is going on there among Zapatistas, probably more going on, but the easy land thing now is, I think, perfectly revealed. And I bet we just have this big long silence as people, some people anyway, refuse to kind of ponder that, and when the next of this type of thing jump up, it'll be just total excitement, and anybody who wonders about what it's really all about will just be, kind of suppressed. Well, who are you to blah blah, that's just happens too long of them. Here's an interesting out of some new publications. Well, let's mention this one. This is from somewhere in Southern California. A new little zine. It's pretty cool. I think there's been at least two issues called Desperate Measures. And if you want to check it out, try Desperate Measures Journal. Desperate Measures Journal at hotmail.com. Yeah, that looks pretty cool. It's just got a few copies of this new thing. And I think I'll not go into too much news here, but the avian flu, bird flu, has appeared in Siberia, raising the alarm bell about its spreading closer to Western Europe. This is the first major outbreak of the lethal virus in birds in Russia, as it keeps on spreading. I think before we take in the break or anything else, and since I had a fairly intense weekend, a lot of driving, I'm going to have ultra alert. I'm going to do some reading later on, and maybe I can handle that just fine, I think. But I do want to offer, because I'm always trying to help out, I've got some self-help stuff here. I want to give some practical help here. Part of it is a little glossary, but first thing, and you might have seen this is a syndicated thing from the New York Times and elsewhere. I think it's the beginning of October is the biggest overhaul of the bankruptcy law goes into effect in over 25 years. You don't have much time to have your debts erased, because after beginning of October, it'll be too late. So get that plastic together and run it way up. Just run it right, and then just file, go to bankruptcy mode. Carl's looking at me askance. No, he's doing that. Just go for it. This is purely educational or recreational, what I'm saying here, it's exactly theoretical. It's academic, I can't imagine anyone doing this. But TikTok, get on it. Sink the fat boy. It's a current phrase. What I'm going to do here is just, I want to translate a few things for your edification, just to clarify a few things here. I think Aragorn thinks he beat me two wannabes, but I already had figured it out when I saw this tonight, actually. But here's a few little tips. First of all, if you're looking around, internet-wise, oh, and by the way, kwvaradio.org, that's where you can get this in later in the week at the Green Anarchy webpage. It'll be downloaded, but and don't go to just kwva, which I did, because that's a Korean War of America thing. You're going to get this blast of military music and horrible graphics. You won't get kwva. And or call in at 346-0645-541-346-0645. These are some places where people go for quote anarchist information, and I just want to break it down for you. Info Shop, No, don't say info shop, say progressive shop. Well, if you're not info shop, I mean, that's what that's at. And Infos, no, that's not Infos, that's syndicalist Infos. There you go, that's another one. And antipolitics.forum is, of course, marxistpolitics.forum. And so everyone to figure it out. Here's a publication. This starts you out. I don't really like this, but Anarchy, a Journal of the Zarang. Well, that is, the translation is Anarchy, a Journal of Armchair Desire. So, now you know what that's about. And there's, they're still celebrating the 100th anniversary of Industrial Workers of the World. And this is from Syndicalist Infos, also known as Infos. I just want to make a band for you here. There's an event at CUNY Grad Center, that's the City University of New York Grad Center, to celebrate the IWW centenary celebration. Well, first of all, everybody knows that only grad students are syndicalists, and Marxists, too. I mean, we only find them among grad students. So it's not mistaken that CUNY Grad Center would be the saddest CUNY. And the other part of it, IWW Centenary Celebration should be IWW Cemetery Celebration. Just for, now you're all clued in. And speaking of publications, getting back to publications, Green Anarchy, the deadline is coming up September 1. And, I just saw something, this came in the mail with these little reports from distributors. A Canadian distributor, I don't know if we have more than one, or maybe I should say we have more than one, but we got a report on the current issue, how it's been selling, issue number 20. 99% have sold. That is awesome. It's the best yet from, it's just, I guess I have note from a Canadian distributor. Species Trading number 4 there was a glitch, and it is being shipped, Species Trading number 4. Some people have ordered it through Green Anarchy, and other people, it has been announced, so definitely, but it's going to show up here real soon. There's just been some kind of boring technical problems, but that's coming around. But since really nobody has it, I'm going to read from that. So I think that's worthwhile. Among other things, but let's see. Why don't we just show up on the music? And then we'll go back to the 3460645.
monsters we found. With the pain in his head, as a fan of
it's a little bit not too Afrocentric, erotic, space, groove, jazz, funk, acid, punk.
If you find yourself trolling the Lonely Left End of the Left End Dial on Saturday morning, check out the Lonely Guy Radio program. That's right, from 6 to 9 every Saturday, we're bringing the very best college music. That's the Lonely Guy Radio program, Saturday mornings from 6 to 9, brought to you by your good friend, the idiot who's on the phone, Kate W.B.D. I found that Marxist Politics forum chat board is handy for illustrating certain points or certain questions, and I've kind of been tripping on some of these things from time to time. Here's an interesting thing, just a little quote. I've kind of chafed at what it seems to me kind of an elusive deal on the part of some people over there in terms of, for example, the question of technology, or also, for example, what is insurrection and anarchism. And other people too, I think have become kind of frustrated, can't get a straight answer. For example, the technology thing, the refrain, the constant answer there is, well, we can't really talk about technology, we can only talk about it by means of talking about social relations, okay, which it never gets off the ground in terms of connecting with really anything, and as some people have noticed. Anyway, this is another, so in lieu of maybe coming to grips with some of these things and maybe being a little more transparent about it, here's another point of view from Sasha Kaye, and I think that he's very representative of this kind of line of this sort of approach. He said, this is a very interesting point. I think this is worth thinking about. The quote itself is self-explanatory, I think. I believe that insurrectionary events themselves, through people transforming the world, transform individuals. And I don't believe that we can simply work at the level of a paradigm shift of convincing people to change their ideas first and then transform our material and social relations. Okay, events themselves. But what events? I mean, you can't, this is not just something that comes down from heaven, and then somehow you arrive at some ideas or another. I mean, I'm not saying people don't learn through their self-activity, I'm not saying that at all, but if you're avoiding the question of ideas by, this is, seems like another maneuver to avoid that, events themselves. Well, the thing is, there are all kinds of things that occur to people to constitute those events. And that's kind of the point. I mean, what is it that you pursue? I was seeing also on the same board, here's another one. Now, this could be a perfect example for a lot of people of where they see those events that you're trying to transform the world. This is also from this week, from somebody else that chimes in on this chat board. A friend of mine works the late shift at Burger King, and last week she and her co-workers walked off the job together because the late shift was being understaffed and they were having to do a lot more work than the other shifts. Because of their walkout, management has added staff to the night shift, so they won an immediate victory. Now, I think it's good if people are being overworked, they resist, but the failure of this point is that this is what constitutes transformative activity, but without some kind of framework, how do you assess what is worth doing? I mean, for example, in this case, what is the validity of Burger King for putting out this kind of industrial crap quote food, involving the misery of millions of animals, and so on and so on and so on, as if, well, that's just fine. You know, it isn't just fine. I'm not saying people don't find themselves in lousy jobs. I'm not sure how many people on this board have some of the reasons that some others do, such as the responsibility of children, the lack of education, and so forth. But that's another question, I guess. So, whatever activity we have is already a choice. There's some kind of framework of thought there, which is in this, which is in that. Being at the prison down there today, I was thinking about how, for example, in California, by many accounts, the most powerful union in the state of California is prison guards. So they're just building prisons all the time, and they're very well organized, they're very powerful. Well, what if they're overworked? I mean, should we get more money? Should we get more? Should we do more guards, more prisons? I mean, do we assume the validity of what they're doing? No. I certainly don't think so. Et cetera. Where's the perspective that gets outside of that? There's news this week with the spiraling gas prices. Truckers are conducting protests. Well, of course they are. They're being squeezed. But what is the nature of the whole project? What is the nature of keeping the whole system running? And, keeping the treadmill of destruction, should it be improved or I mean, it's not saying this is a very simplified thing, but meanwhile, here's another thing that I thought maybe they shed some light also from somebody here at MarxistPolitics.forum, and it's our good friend Red Hughes, who's a self-described Marxist. He says, I think this is pretty interesting, and I'm going to just start in the middle of it because I think that this too is speaks for itself. Freddie Pullman began as an anti-state communist, but basically took a turn toward a romantic absolute rejection of progress. I don't know if it's in quotes. He became both anti-civilization and anti-technologically. Pullman's ideas have the seed of the more revolutionary class-oriented primitivism as opposed to the individualist romantic type primitivism that has been around forever and goes nowhere. Anyway, here's the punchline thing, really. Anyway, a lot of the insurrection anarchist play, it seems to be a silly, with the term civilization. I don't know why Rob Hughes is always leaving out key words and he does it over and over again. I don't know why he keeps doing it. And it makes it hard to read, but I guess what he means is a silly game or something. With the term civilization, they are anti-civilization but not primitivist. That's the quote. And you hear that a lot. Oh, I hate primitivist, but oh yeah, I'm certainly an anti-civilization. And it always makes me wonder. Anyway, he goes on. That essentially works out to be against class society, and for building a new society in the most appropriate manner possible. Kind of exactly like communists. But there's a wash of greater extremism. In other words, it sounds cooler. It's a more exciting brand name, he says later, than anti-state communism. And there you have it. And that's exactly where some of these people are. They want to change the word where it says class society. They just want to insert civilization without changing anything. So they're still Marxists, but then they can play at being anti-civilization. Whereas Red, who is a communist, who is a Marxist, says, that's kind of a fast shuffle. You're really kind of not bringing that off. You're getting rid of it. And so he's actually, that's exactly what I've said before. That sounded as cringy for me, but it's just another perspective of reaching the same kind of unmasking. Let's see, what should I talk about? Well, I just want to mention this in passing. All this stuff with the GPS and the global positioning systems and the cell phones and all these things, of course, it's all linked up together. And somebody said, I thought this was a fantastic point. It's as if people don't know where they are or who they are. And they seem to need the constant reassurance. What are they missing? I mean, they all seem to be connected in this. And when you're in these conversations, I mean, you can make a case, for example, cell phones. It's good to have that in an emergency or something like that. But there's always a nice person first to listen to the most inane conversations that didn't even need to be taking place at all, much less in public in somebody's space or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just, it's kind of like it. I think that was a good point. What is up in society where people seem to need this constant checking in on the phone, now I'm two blocks away, or something like that, and saying nothing, but wherever they are, they need a computer to tell them, they can look out the window of their car most of the time, but then they lose even that skill. But I think it goes more deeply, it's deeper than that, that this person is saying, they don't know where they are, the place thing is being disappeared in the world, as various people have put that in various ways.
Oh my God.
That's pretty interesting. No.
Pretty loud.
It is a loud one. And this, I had mentioned before, this book called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder by Richard Louv. That's how overorganized childhood is, and really how plugged in it all is. And there's two quotes in the front, in musical, okay, I'll get to that in one sec. Two quotes at the beginning of the book. One is Walt Whitman, and they're both great quotes. Here's the first one. There was a child went forth every day, and the first object he looked upon, that object he'd be carrying. And that object became part of him for the day, or a certain part of the day, or for many years, or stretching circles of years. The early lilacs became part of the child, and grass and white and rain morning glories, and white and red clover, and the sound of the funeral bird, etc. And the other quote, This is from a fourth grader in San Diego. I like to play indoors better because that's where all the electrical outlets are. Whoa. Chilling, but no surprise. Hi there. Somebody.
Hey, John.
Oh, hey, man. How are you?
Just fine.
Good, good. Thanks for coming.
Pretty good.
What are you up to?
Oh, you know, making a little wheat paste, making some journals. Come into your show, just by a call, let you know if somebody's listening. I liked your, I was thinking about your GPS thing a little bit. I just sort of spent some time in New York City, and I noticed, like, how much people love cameras in New York City, and they love, like, taking pictures and, like, measuring the reality, constantly, like, framing it. Like, nobody can just experience something, you know, they always need, you know, like a camera or a GPS device. And I just think it's like, these are the things in Civ that sort of give our lives meaning. You know, it's like, it's a measurement of progress. It's like a measurement of where we are. And if you don't have those, all of a sudden, like, you're confronted with this really subjective world. And it's sort of scary because you don't have this objective measure that a clock or a GPS device or a camera gives you. You know?
More, I guess, than things that do, huh?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I just feel like, you know, yesterday I was sitting out, you know, you talk about in some of your writings how, you know, we've sort of gone away from this more direct experience with our reality, but, you know, yesterday I was sitting by the river and just sitting down and, you know, just listening to the water and watching the moon reflect off of the water, the surface of the water, and, you know, just really experiencing that moment. I feel like, you know, when you're in civilization, you don't really get a chance to do things like that, you know. So instead, like, you need to experience your reality in a different way. Yeah. I mean, I just think it gives our lives meaning.
Yeah, that's a poetic reminder. What a moon tonight, huh?
Yeah.
It's full last night, I think, huh?
No, it was actually full on the 17th, I think.
Oh, huh?
Yeah.
That's glorious.
But, you know, nothing that amazing. I just thought that I'd give you a call and let you know I was listening.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Glad you're back.
Farewell, John.
Take care. Good to hear that. Maybe considered that somebody could help me out with this, who's thought about this, or as a source or anything else, an opinion, a question. A friend of mine, well, I won't go into this entire story, but Carl Jaspers, a German philosopher, more than anyone has been associated with a formulation called the axiom age, which was a kind of pivotal point in civilization between the years 800 BC and 200 BC. And actually, more specifically, right around 500 BC, when I think at that same time, in the same, well, same year, same generation, Buddha, Confucius, the prophet Isaiah, the second Isaiah, that is Zoroaster may have been slightly before that, but not by more than 20 years or so, I think, something like that. And who else? I can't remember the list, but this is the point of really the birth of the world religions. And you could say that Christianity and Islam, which came a little bit later, were just spin-offs from this point, this particular movement in, well, moment in history. And it's kind of incredible because people in different places simultaneously were developing generally similar ideas and certainly differences, especially Confucius is a little bit different from the others, but to generalize quite a bit here briefly, the idea of transcendent divinity, not just monotheism, but a more complete severing from nature, I think it's part of it, a severing from local nature religions and connections like that into these kind of imperialistic world religions, everyone I can find that has written about this has looked upon this as a great leap forward in human consciousness and spiritual development. And it seems more like, and I'm just exploring this now, I've been working on this for a month or two only, but that it's really, I mean, domestication happened far earlier, needless to say. I mean, the bigger, earlier civilizations, for example, of Mesopotamia and Sumerian ones, and Egypt, two of the most notable earlier kind of original big civilizations and others, of course. But so by the time we get to the first millennium BC, obviously domestication has prevailed and civilization has. But in the first millennia, it's really that is the thousand year, or we could say it this way, around 1000 BC, the Iron Age begins, and the Bronze Age is passed, and civilizations move into the period of mineralogy, which is more modern, and has a lot of repercussions and developmental things involved. But there's also a time of a lot of tensions and challenges for civilization, for its stability. And I think it's probably more fruitful to look at this as a kind of fitting on of a yoke that serves domestication and civilization. It's not a great leap forward. It's how do they really solidify as relatively the ruler of civilization, and that's what these things mean. And of course, they're still, it's still functioning. It's still, we're at the point now, 2,500 years later, these world legends are still there, except for Zoroastrianism is not huge anymore, but the others have served pretty darn well. And that would require quite a discussion about just what that means and how that works, how people buy into it and why and anything else. But it's kind of fascinating. I think it's really worth looking at. Now we seem to be more at the place where if anything is transcending that, it's just technology itself almost. Because, for example, today, I think this is pretty interesting. Today's New York Times is kind of a big op-ed piece here by an Indian writer, Pankaj Mishra, called "How India Reconciles Hindu Values and Biotech." And I would say Hinduism is relatively less anti-nature and anti-life than the other major religions. Relatively, it may have something to do with the fact that it's polytheistic and not monotheistic. Anyway, this article discusses how India has become one of the leading biotechnology powers, and they're doing all this biotech stuff, cloning through stem cells, and all this kind of research they're very big, as most people know. In South Korea, mainly a Buddhist scientist there who cloned human embryonic stem cells claimed that he was recycling, quote, recycling life just as reincarnation does. So in other words, this writer is pointing how these religions don't stand up at all. The religions have to just accept the trajectory of the new forms of domestication, all this high-tech stuff. It doesn't, it doesn't provide any kind of defense against it. It doesn't stand up against it. And that's obvious whether you like Japan or any place else. It's just, if you thought that meant something in terms of the actual stuff that goes on in the world, you really are, China, for example, I think this is kind of related. There was a piece Friday, a new arms race to build the world's mightiest computers, and part of this points out how China now has 19 supercomputers ranked among the 500 fastest in there. And they're doing story in terms of developing these giant high performance computer technology, and you know, as part of their massive industrialization drive. And then we're alone, just to kind of comment in some way or another on the spiritual science of Adiva downtown, the art gallery down there on West Broadway, Wednesday night at 7 o'clock for $5. Here's a program called The Living Temple. It's a video dealing about weird secret places, you know, when he travels around. It's kind of, it sounds like a travel around, you know, to different countries. And here's the way it ends up. Check this out. Discover how global communication is transforming countless secret places around the world into a single living temple of shared human experience. Oh, that sounds comforting. Yeah, it's not just this soulless, globalizing, standardizing horror thing. No, it's actually, oh gosh, it's just it's kind of a global spiritual lineage or something like that. Transforming countless secret places. Transforming them, to be sure, or debasing them wherever you were at or not. Do they need to be transformed, or one would have thought, I think, for a lot of believers anyway, they can't be transformed. Anyway, that's just got up in the world. We're running a long time here, but it's 346-0645. Anyone want to call this? I'm looking up something else, and here's an interesting quote. This is from the end of 1967. I just thought this is the person who said this, you might have guessed who said it, but here's the quote. Cells and resistance will defend everywhere against technology's unchecked power. They will keep reflection alive inconspicuously and will prepare the reversal, for which one will clamor when the general desolation becomes unbearable. That sounds like ELF or something, you know. I think that's a wonderful quote. Martin Heidegger, toward the end of his life, and there's a lot we could say about Heidegger. And he was generally always avoiding being called a Luddite, even though he had quite a critique of technology. But that's kind of that's kind of down there. I was going to talk about running from Neil to Green Yankee. I'm going for it is. And you know something, this is not connected, right? But I have said before, there is such an enormous amount of prisoner interest in Green Yankee, and it is full of prisoners. And you know, we get feedback from all over the place, all over this country, about how many discussion groups there are, how many yards of like gone green acres, anything, you know. But it does have some meaning to people. And this outbreak in Calipatria State Prison in Southern California, I don't think it had a darn thing to do with Green Acre, but there are different things that are going on, and this is, you know, there are different sites of resistance, and there are different things cooking, and I think Chris is over here, maybe we should just not go over for a change and play some songs. Okay, thanks, Carl. Thanks for listening.
Whatever. I went down to the beach and saw Kiki. She's all like, ew, and I'm like, whatever. Whatever. this chick comes up to me and she's all like, hey, aren't you that dude on